From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Believe it or not, despite Democrat obstructionism, the U.S. Senate is setting records with judicial appointments. We'll talk about it with Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. Also, the NRA has a new president. Colonel Oliver North joins us a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And the Oklahoma governor, Mary Fallon, is taking heat from the left for signing a bill that simply allows religious adoption agencies to continue finding homes for children. We'll talk about that with Oklahoma State Senator Greg Treat a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And we'll also get a live update from Israel with Chris Mitchell. What's happening in Gaza? We'll talk about that with Chris. Also, Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland will be here to talk about the issue that is before the Supreme Court. Can states force pregnancy resource centers to promote abortion? We'll talk about that here on Washington Watch. So we've got a lot coming up. You don't want to miss any of it. If you do, you can find it all later archived at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Speaking of the website, pastors, we have just a couple, and I emphasize just a couple of seats left at our annual Watchman on the Wall pastors briefing exclusively for pastors coming up next week, May 23rd through the 25th. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. You know, one of the things we've seen over and over in the media, President Trump trying to get nominations, appointees that he's nominated through the process, and there's a logjam. However, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, has been working with his members to systematically work through a lot of judicial appointments in key places, and they've been setting some records. Joining us now, actually coming off the Senate floor voting for some of these nominations, is Oklahoma Senator James Lankford. James, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Really a privilege to be with you again today.
Well, Senator, the Senate, despite the obstructionism, despite a lot of the delay tactics, you're actually setting some records when it comes to appointing and confirming some key judicial appointments.
That is correct. Yeah, one of the priorities that we've had is obviously we've had a slowdown in some other areas, and so we've shifted to things that we can make progress on, and one of those things is the circuit court. These are the first judges of appeal. So when they go to a federal district court, if they're appealed, they go to that circuit court. The next appeal will be the Supreme Court. So it's a very important court, this appeals court. We have 19 judges that we have confirmed now for the appeals court. At this point, 1/8 of all the judges in all the circuit courts in the country are Trump appointees, and we're not done. We're still to be able to work through this process. So that's in a year and a half for 1/8 of all the courts in the country to be Trump appointees. Makes a massive change in the courts, and we'll continue to be able to work through that process.
Now, Senator, that's quite significant when you think about some of these decisions that come from the circuit court level that have been, activist decisions that have advanced what I can only describe as a liberal legislative agenda that Congress wouldn't pass. They've turned to the courts to do this. Will have lasting repercussions for that judicial activism.
No, it really will. One of the things that lasts longer than any president is law and judges. So if you can pass laws, you go through the process, that outlasts the presidency. And then obviously if you put judges in place, that's a generational change that happens. And the judges that we're putting in place are not necessarily judges that are going to be biased one direction or another. We're looking for judges that will just interpret the law. That's the key thing. And what we found is in a lot of these cases where a judge gets frustrated that Congress hasn't passed something, and so they'll try to create law on the bench. That's the real problem. If they'll just look at the Constitution, follow the Constitution, we're not looking for you to have a bias other than a bias for the Constitution and for the law.
Right. And that's exactly it. I mean, you're looking for judges that will basically be the umpires, call the balls and strikes and say, this is constitutional, this is not. Not becoming an uber legislative body where you've got, 9 or in most cases 5 Supreme Court justices determining policy for the country, such as the redefinition of marriage.
Right. And that's a basic thing. If we're going to have any of those national conversations, we have a way to do that. That is either amending the Constitution and going through that long process, or by passing law on it if it's consistent with the Constitution. But all legislative powers resides in the people, and that is done through their elected officials, through the House and the Senate. So that's where it has to happen.
Senator James Lankford, a number of your colleagues have along these same lines, trying to get this backlog of nominations done, calling upon the majority leader, Senator McConnell, to forego the August break to dig in and get this stuff done, because no one knows what the outcome of this fall's election will bring when it comes to the makeup of the Senate.
Yeah, that is correct. And one of the primary things that we have to get done is we have to get appropriations done. We can't have another omnibus. There have been 18 of the last 20 years that there's been an omnibus spending bill, and we have got to be able to get through the nominations. And while the speed of nominations has picked up in the last couple of months as we've applied more pressure, we've got to be able to finish this out and get President Trump his staff, which he still needs all these individual people to be able to get on board and get nominated, and we need to get through judges. We've got about 67 judges right now in the queue that we've got to work our way through. And so my statement hasn't been that we just canceled August to say we canceled August. My statement is there's 1 month out of the year, out of the 12 months of the year, there's only 1 month that we're not in session all month. That's August. I'm recommending if we can't get these nominations done and we can't get appropriations done, we work in D.C. through August as well to be able to make sure that we actually get this done. It's that important for the country.
I think that's a very important distinction. There's no reason just to be in D.C. if you're not getting this stuff done. I think this is one of the issues, and I know you've heard it as you go back to one of the reddest states in the nation, is that people want to see the agenda that President Trump brought in, the conservatives brought in. They want to see it accomplished, and they want to see people fighting for it, in the United States Congress.
Yep, and as well they should, because that's what they've asked us to do. When we were elected to do it, we were elected to get things done. Obviously, the Senate is set up and designed, and I believe rightfully so, that all opinions in the country are heard in the Senate, but that doesn't mean the Senate can't do anything. It's got to be able to move, especially on things like nominations and appropriations. We finished the tax bill. That was an enormous gain for the tax bill. We've got a transformation that's happening in the judiciary, whether that be Neil Gorsuch in the Supreme Court and now the Circuit Court and a large number of district court individuals. So there have been a lot of accomplishments we have been able to get done. It just takes a long time to do it. And my challenge is, if it's not getting done and we're running out of time, let's stay here through August as well. And I would tell you, August is a beneficial time for me to be back in Oklahoma meeting with as many people, as many counties as I possibly can. We have 77 counties across the state, and for me to be able to cover it, it takes a lot of time to be able to do that. And I'm grateful to do that during the August time period. But if it causes us to get more judges and to be able to get legislation done and appropriations done, then let's be here in August and get it done.
Yeah, I know Oklahoma, that's a lot of pickup time in the pickup truck driving across the dusty roads of plains of Oklahoma. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, excuse me, Tony Perkins. My guest, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. James, I know you've got some other votes, so when you get a break, when you need a break, do so. But I want to transition quickly to get your thoughts. You and I, a few years ago, were a part of a delegation that went to Israel. I know you're supportive of Israel. Yesterday, with the dedication of the embassy, your thoughts on where this might lead in terms of a managed peace in the Middle East?
Yeah, I would hope that it does lead towards a managed peace. There are some people that are falsely saying that moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem hurts the peace process. I think it actually helps the peace process. It puts the marker out to everyone that we're going to recognize what is. If you're going to visit with Benjamin Netanyahu in his office is in Jerusalem. If you're going to visit with the members of the Knesset in their legislative branch, it's in Jerusalem. If you're going to visit with their judiciary, they're in Jerusalem. It's not in Tel Aviv. That is the capital of Israel. So we should have our embassy at that spot. So that's been a no-brainer moment. The next thing has got to be, though, is to be able to establish, okay, now that this has been done, finally after 70 years of recognizing what everyone can see obvious with their eyes, that the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, we still have to be able to work through the process to be able to get to a peace. There have been dozens of individuals that have been killed as they're rushing the fence and trying to illegally cross the border for all sorts of nefarious purposes out of Gaza over the last couple of days. Now, we've not seen that in the West Bank area. But in Gaza, that's been a big issue as Hamas continues to be able to foment violence in that area. Everyone wants to see a lasting peace. But the way that you do that is not ignoring things that are obvious. One of the things that's been the big challenge for the whole region has been this continual press for 70 years that Palestinians have what's called a right of return, that they should be able to return back and take any lands that were lost through the battle or that were lost through the transition of Israel becoming Israel, that they're going to be able to step back and take over those lands. That continues to foment violence as you tell generation after generation after generation, where you live is not home. Where those Jews live right there, that's home, and you need to go take it from them. And so we have to be able to create an environment where people live in peace, but also in recognition that Israel is not only a nation, but it's a nation that should be there and it has a right to exist.
So, Senator, I mean, we've seen the media coverage in the last 36 hours, you know, playing up on that violence, and it is tragic. I mean, any loss of life is tragic.
It is.
I've been there, right there on the border with Gaza. But does not the leadership of Hamas of the Gaza Strip, do they not have a responsibility to govern their people and say, hey, don't do this? We're not seeing those messages come out. And in fact, for all we know, they're encouraging it and inspiring it.
It does appear that Hamas is actually inspiring youths of that area to try to rush the fence and to literally use them as humans that they're throwing away their life for some sort of PR purposes. Hamas has become so vile to even the people in the area that the Palestinian Authority that handles the West Bank is cutting off funding to Hamas to even say to the Palestinian Authority, Hamas is so vile that they're not going to allow them to be able to get funding. And that is a major transition that is occurring as well. So Hamas is becoming more and more isolated in the region by other nations in the region like Egypt and by Saudi Arabia and by the Palestinian Authority. We need to continue to advance that to be able to say, let's protect and honor the lives of those Palestinians that live in the Gaza Strip, because they also live under a ruthless dictatorship that foments terrorism.
Well, I appreciate all that you have done on that issue. I know you've been working to ensure that Israel is treated fairly, and in fact that our tax dollars going to the Palestinian Authority are not used to foment hatred and that violence against Israel and the United States. Are we making progress on that front?
We are, actually. UN Ambassador Haley has been a terrific asset to be able to just address this basic part of the peace process, that is how we handle American tax dollars. Americans are involved in trying to help with the peace process and have been for decades. We help both the Israelis and we help the Palestinians. We do humanitarian work. We do education work. We do work for healthcare, all of those things in the region. We've been very engaged with the Palestinians and with the Israelis, and we should lean in and do that. We're a moral leader in the world. We need to act like a moral leader in the world in the way that we handle all people. But we've also got to say, if this creates an environment that generation after generation, that people have this kind of violence, and if it creates an environment generation after generation that actually hurts the peace process than helps it,
yeah,
we should evaluate that and try to turn that around. And that's what Ambassador Haley, other pieces of legislation that we're working on the appropriations process to hold some accountability to how our dollars are spent.
All right. Senator James Lankford, thank you for taking time to step off the Senate floor to talk with us.
Glad to be able to do it, Tony. Take care.
All right. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Coming up next, with the Second Amendment under greater threat than ever, who is the NRA looking to? Well, they're looking to a Marine. That's right. Retired Marine Colonel Ollie North joins us next right here on Washington Watch, hosted, by the way, by a Marine. Don't go away. We're back with more after this. Are you listening, General Boykin? Are you listening? Don't go away.
Are you a pastor? Do you know a pastor? We want to invite pastors to Family Research Council's Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Briefing on May 23rd through 25th in Washington, D.C. The theme this year is While It Is Day, Repent, Unite, Engage. Pastors will hear from John Bevere, Michelle Bachman, Josh McDowell, Kay Arthur, Todd Starnes, congressional leaders, and others who will inform, inspire, and equip them to engage on issues relevant to today's culture. They will also enjoy a tour and reception at Museum of the Bible, a spiritual heritage tour of the U.S. Capitol, and networking with other pastors from around the nation. Registration is just $249 for first-time pastors and $299 for pastors who have attended before. FRC has limited funding to cover hotels and meal costs. For more information and to register, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit watchmanpastors.org. That's 1-800-225-4008 or watchmanpastors.org.
Since the 2016 election, faith, family, and freedom are on the move in America. Can values voters keep the momentum going in November? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand with our leaders and fight for our values. To join this noble mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. And join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. You'll also find plenty of networking opportunities with attendees and organizations that share a Christian worldview on issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, and national security. On September 21st to 23rd, stand with Values Voters to restore our great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television and social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
Host Tony Perkins, so glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, the National Rifle Association has a new president. Of course, the Second Amendment probably under one of the greatest threats and attacks that we've seen in years. So the NRA needed someone at the helm to fight this battle, and who did they look to? Well, they looked to a retired Marine colonel, one of my heroes, Lieutenant Colonel Ollie North, and he joins us now. Colonel North, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony. Semper Fi, Marine.
Semper Fi. I'm trying to pull the general here into the to the studio for the conversation, but you know, I think once I introduced you as a Marine, I think he's running away
probably,
somewhere. But
yeah.
Maybe we can drag him in. We'll hog time and drag him in.
He may be in the head.
I mean, it's not like you needed something else to do, but the National Rifle Association just elected you as their president. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, it was a surprise. When I got down to Dallas for the annual meeting, they pulled me aside and said, Pete Brownell, who's been the president for the last year, cannot stand for reelection. He's got family and business issues that are being very seriously affected by this nationwide, very well-organized boycott, divest, and sanction program that has been launched against the NRA. Very much like, by the way, what's happened to Israel. I've been listening to your conversations about what's going on in Israel today, and it's not a whole lot different. It's a little bit less violent, but the kind of things that have been perpetrated against the NRA ever since the travesty of what happened in Florida on Valentine's Day is the harassment, the threats, the vandalism, the nonstop propaganda gin that's come out in the mainstream media has all adversely affected a number of people. It's not affected the membership of the NRA nearly as much as they intended. I mean, I've kind of watched the media ever since I was down in Dallas, and they're saying the NRA is on its heels, and people are flocking out of the NRA. The NRA's never had more members since it was organized in 1871. It's taken us since 1871 to get to 6 million members, and my goal is to get another million. And then I'm going to call on all the NRA members, that would be 7 million by then, to go out and contact just one more person. One more person, and we'll double to 14 million. Because if indeed we do have 100 million firearms owners in America, they need to know that the NRA is not just teaching safety and how to properly handle a firearm and the kinds of things that you need. The original purpose of the NRA was to teach those kinds of things in the aftermath of the Civil War. And because people had learned, you know, an awful lot of the folks called into the military didn't know how to shoot. And so the NRA was organized in 1871 for that purpose and to defend the Second Amendment. So I look at what's happened, Tony, and I say to myself, I'm now almost 75 years old. I've never heard a Supreme Court justice, active or retired, urge the repeal of the Second Amendment. We have members of Congress who want to introduce legislation to that effect. That's never happened before. And so when you look at those kinds of things happening and this BDS, this boycott, divest, and sanction the NRA, I look at what the Israelis are going through right now because of propaganda. And that, and the kinds of things you were just talking about on your show, I say to myself, we need somebody who knows what's going on, and I took this job because I do, and furthermore, I love a good fight. And this is going to be a fight, and we're going to double our size at some point here in the not-too-distant future, and it's going to send a message to the George Soros crowd, the Bloomberg crowd, those folks who are using all the instruments of their power, in the banks, and they've got hackers out there that are hacking into phone systems. And my phone went blank within an hour of the press release on Monday last week saying that I was the next president of the NRA. That's how fast it happened.
Wow. So, well, speaking of fights, Colonel, I just had someone join us here in the studio that outranks both of us, but I know we could take him easily.
Yeah, you know, your yes, phone sir. Went blank because of 75 years old. You don't know how to use it, aside from the fact that you're a Marine.
Hey, you know, it's got one button that says call, and I called you as soon as I could, but you were in Israel, see? So, and I'm kind of concerned that you're here now, because right now you should be in Israel, because you know what's going on out there. I mean, it's, yeah, what's happening, you know, if you look at the cultural depravity that's occurring in our country right now and globally. Look at the European Union is sanctimoniously banging at the gates of Israel, just like Hamas and Hezbollah, both of which are wholly owned subsidiaries of the government in Tehran. I mean, and yet you don't see that kind of thing in the headlines. I mean, how did this whole thing get ginned up down in Gaza? It got ginned up in the mosques and with money being sent to Gaza by the Iranians. And I look at this kind of thing happen, General, and I say to myself, thank God we've got Nikki Haley at the United Nations.
I agree.
Colonel, and I'll bring the General in on this as well, when you make reference to what's happening in Israel, you see the BDS movement, you see the resist axis, the axis there in the Middle East, where they're resisting. We see very similar things here, and I think you're right to draw a parallel to the NRA. The left here has become militant in taking away constitutional rights.
Well, look, these are very serious threats. I mean, they describe themselves as activists. I've carried with me ever since it came out. I've got the Washington Compost of April 22nd, and the target the headline reads, "Activists target NRA lobbyist's home, wife's store in Alexandria." The last time I checked, vandalism is against the law. Hacking mm-hmm. into people's computers is against the law. Hacking into bank accounts is against the law. Threatening people over the telephone is against the law. Swatting, which is a process of calling false police reports in to have the SWAT team show up in the middle of the night at an NRA member or a board member or an NRA official, those are all against the law. It's not just a matter of a political
debate. Let me stop you and say one thing as we're going into the break here. Don't you find it amusing that all these anti-gun people, the first people they call are cops that are armed?
Yeah.
When there's a problem? Schools,
in schools, unfortunately, yeah. In Parkland, they didn't do their job.
Right, yeah.
Colonel, got to go. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations on the appointment. We support you wholeheartedly.
Tony, Semper Fi. Tell all your listeners out there, join NRA.org. I need a million
right.
members to join us.
We'll do. General, thanks for making a cameo appearance.
Yeah.
Folks, don't go away. I'm back after this.
Hello. Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television, in social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is not true? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate challenging topics in human sexuality. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT. For years, big money has flowed from big mobile carriers to liberals fighting to fund organizations like Planned Parenthood. With Patriot Mobile, a portion of your bill will be used to support conservative organizations like Family Research Council Action. And as an exclusive FRC Action offer, get a free $50 credit with a 24-month contract when you use promo code FRCA18. Call now 1-800-A-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com.
Hello, can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, still to come, we're going to be joined by Chris Mitchell from CBN. There, he's a bureau chief in the Middle East. He's going to be joining us from Israel, giving us an update on what's happening over there. But first, this past Friday, Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon signed Senate Bill 1140. Now, what this essentially does, it's a pretty straightforward law. It simply says that faith-based institutions that are in the child placement for adoption, in that business, they don't have to violate their faith, the tenets of their faith in order to participate in adoptions in that state. I mean, we've seen this happening across the country where religious organizations that believe in the fact that marriage is a union of a man and a woman— are not wanting to place children in same-sex households. Well, they're being forced out of business. So what happens is you have people wanting to adopt from a, let's say, a Christian adoption agency, and that's not an option because they're being driven out of business by those, I would say, on the left are simply intolerant. Well, joining us now is Oklahoma State Senator Greg Treat. He is the author of the bill, Senate Bill 1140, which was signed into law last week. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
I know you had a pretty contentious and drawn-out session, and this was a bill that actually came down to the wire. So did I characterize it correctly, that it allows organizations that are faith-based to continue to operate in the state of Oklahoma when it comes to adoptions?
Yes, you absolutely did. We're dependent on private entities to provide the recruitment, retention, and training of foster parents and adoptive parents, and our faith-based partners are some of our most important partners in that arena. So we wanted to provide them some protection.
Now, this does not in any way exclude a secular or other adoption agency from placing children wherever it's legal in the state of Oklahoma. So this doesn't exclude anyone. It simply allows religious organizations to operate according to the tenets of their faith, correct?
That's absolutely correct. There are already a few agencies in Oklahoma that adopt to same-sex couples, and this bill wouldn't prohibit them from doing it. It just would allow those faith-based organizations that have a statement of faith to not have to violate that statement of faith in order to partner with the state of Oklahoma to provide this much-needed service.
So are you seeing then, I mean, obviously there was a need for this, but it appears to be, and it's not just in adoptions, but we're seeing this effort basically to force out, squeeze out, silence people of faith in the public square that want to operate according to their faith when it comes primarily to human sexuality, but it's not limited to that. We've seen it also on the abortion issue and others. Do you see more action on this front when it comes to the Oklahoma legislature in protecting religious freedom?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a willingness to do so in Oklahoma. We've had a few bills that have not proceeded that dealt with this arena. But I think in the future you'll see us continue to try to make sure that we protect one of our most important rights as American citizens, and that's to practice our faith freely without the government interference. You know, some people were trying to claim that this violated the Constitution through the Establishment Clause, but this does nothing to establish a religion. It just says that you can freely practice while at the same time join the state. We have nearly 8,000 kids that are in state custody that need a loving home, and this is going to grow the available number of homes and agencies willing to help us in that arena.
Well, I congratulate you on the success of passing this bill, and we're up against a break, but I know that one of those bills that kind of got caught up in the process that didn't pass this year was the Government Non-Discrimination Act, which, as you said, simply allows people to practice their faith unpenalized by the state. Is that something that you think may advance next year?
I believe it will. Senator Silk and Senator Burkine were the authors of that bill. Burkine is not coming back. He's decided not to run for re-election, but Silk will be back, and I anticipate there will be quite a few of us that want to see that idea advance.
All right. Senator Greg Treat, thank you so much for joining us. And again, thank you for being an advocate for religious freedom, and especially in this case for children that need good homes. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. Oklahoma Senator Greg Treat of the state of Oklahoma. That bill, Senate Bill 1140, now law, Mary Fallon coming under attacks by the left. You know, this is the, again, just so you're very clear on what this bill does, it doesn't exclude anybody from, I mean, it's just like the bakers and the florists and all that. It doesn't exclude anybody from getting a service. It just doesn't mandate someone to do a service that violates their beliefs. And we're all talking about just one area. It's over the area of human sexuality, marriage. And so it simply says, all right, these people are not going to be forced and penalized by the state or driven from their ministry because they refuse to yield to what, you know, has happened just in the last few years. It's redefinition of human sexuality and marriage. Where's the tolerance? All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Chris Mitchell from Israel, giving us an update on what's happening there with the violence along the Gaza Strip. And we're also going to be joined by Congressman Andy Harris in the next segment. We're going to be talking about his lecture that he did here at the Family Research Council today. So don't go away. There's still more Washington Watch to come in just a moment.
Are you a pastor? Do you know a pastor? We want to invite pastors to Family Research Council's Watchmen on the Wall Pastors Briefing on May 23rd through 25th in Washington, D.C. The theme this year is While It Is Day, Repent, Unite, Engage. pastors will hear from John Bevere, Michelle Bachmann, Josh McDowell, Kay Arthur, Todd Starnes, congressional leaders, and others who will inform, inspire, and equip them to engage on issues relevant to today's culture. They will also enjoy a tour and reception at Museum of the Bible, a spiritual heritage tour of the U.S. Capitol, and networking with other pastors from around the nation. Registration is just $249 for first-time pastors and $299 for pastors who have attended before. FRC has limited funding to cover hotels and meal costs. For more information and to register, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit watchmanpastors.org. That's 1-800-225-4008 or watchmanpastors.org.
Have you ever wondered how your cell phone company is spending your hard-earned money? For years, big money has flowed from big mobile carriers to liberals fighting to fund organizations like Planned Parenthood. With Patriot Mobile, your money will only be used to support conservative organizations like Family Research Council Action. Patriot Mobile is offering unlimited talk, text, and data at better prices than anything you can get from Big Mobile. More importantly, up to 5% of your monthly bill goes specifically to support conservative causes at no additional cost to you. You get the same nationwide coverage with unlimited talk, text, and data for a better price. Right now, unlimited talk and text starts at $20 a month. And as an exclusive FRC Action offer, get a free $50 credit with a 24-month contract when you use promo code FRCA18. To switch, call 1-800-A-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com. You have probably heard a lot about the LGBT movement on television, in social media, in the news, and from celebrities. But do you know what is true and what is false? FRC has created a new resource that gives you the facts on LGBT issues to help you navigate the challenging topics surrounding human sexuality. We are all created in the image and likeness of God, and all people are equal in dignity and value and must be treated with respect. LGBT activists operate on a weak understanding of sexuality and ignore how scientific and empirical evidence refutes their claims. To get factual, practical answers on how to respond to the LGBT movement, go to frc.org/LGBT, where you can download this important resource free of charge. Again, go to frc.org/LGBT to learn more.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, let me again just remind you, pastors, if you're listening, we have just a couple of seats left for our annual Watchman on the Wall Pastors Briefing coming up next week, May the 23rd through the 25th. Great, great event. Very encouraging, challenging, inspiring. If you'd like to know more, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. But do it quickly because those seats probably will not last through tomorrow. Okay. Yesterday, we talked obviously a lot about the dedication of the new embassy in Jerusalem. The media's focus on this in the last 24, 36 hours has been on the violence on Gaza Strip. Now, I was just there 2 weeks ago, okay, and this stuff's been going on for quite some time. It's like they're looking for a reason to create conflict. They're using the embassy move as the pretext for this, but it's just ongoing. They're just looking for a reason. It's unfortunate. It's tragic what we see happening where the leadership of Hamas is encouraging young people and others to try to storm the border fence, which is leading to this violence. Well, I wanted to get the latest on what's happening there. And so we go to our good friend Chris Mitchell with CBN, the chief Middle East correspondent there for CBN. We were just with him a couple of weeks ago there in Jerusalem. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you again.
Now, I know that you actually had a pretty good view of the embassy move because you you actually live right there in the neighborhood. So I think you probably got a pretty good glimpse of it. What are things like today in Jerusalem 24 hours after the dedication of the new embassy?
Well, I think to some degree there's still a euphoria about what happened. I think a lot of the people here in Israel, especially the leadership of Israel, are just euphoric that the United States finally made this decision to go ahead and move the embassy to legitimize what many people have or recognize the reality of 3,000 years, not just the past 70 years when Israel's been a nation, but 3,000 years when King David actually chose Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And also, for example, we talked to Alan Dershowitz at the ceremony. And this is the man that wrote the case for Israel, and he think this is going to help legitimize, at least in the family of nations, what's happening in Israel. And what the imprimatur of the United States, it really is huge development. And I do live in the neighborhood, but we had the opportunity to be there actually in the ceremony and report for CBN News. And you had the sense, Tony, that you were just seeing the marriage of history and prophecy unfolding before your very eyes.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. As I was watching, opted not to go back to Israel. That's a long trip, so I've opted to watch it on television. But I'm sure it was much better actually being there. But the reality is, most of the neighbors there in the Middle East, we don't see people in the streets in Jordan. We don't see them rioting in Egypt. We just see this small segment there in Gaza, under Hamas's leadership. I don't think there's anything that would ever appease the leadership of Hamas. I mean, I think it's tragic what they're doing with their own people to try to draw attention.
No, it is. And as you said before we started talking, it really is Hamas encouraging people to go and breach the border fence with Israel. Earlier today, the former national security advisor, Yaakov Amidor, made the point that Hamas is actually in trouble. They shot missiles several years ago. Israel developed the Iron Dome system to shoot those down, almost each and every one. Later, they have terror tunnels where they dig literally under to Israeli territory to have these kidnapping or terror raids. Israel has been able to stop them with technology. And now they're literally using thousands of people to try to breach the border and go into Israel itself. And what they're doing, Tony, really, it is tragic. And they're using their own people as human shields to be propaganda value in the international community. So that when the more people die, when Israel is forced to protect its borders, and people unfortunately and tragically die. And by the way, many of these people that are coming to the border are not just innocent people. 24 of the 60 people that have been killed have been identified by the IDF as terrorists. There's video of a Hamas group, 8 of them, coming in with grenades, with rifles. So this is not just a peaceful demonstration. The propaganda value, though, to the Hamas is what they want. They want the international community, the international media, to say, look what Israel is doing and demonize Israel. And so this is what Hamas's attempt is, to use these people as just human shields. By the way, Israel has been dropping leaflets warning people to stay away because it's dangerous. Right. They did that in the several wars, the couple of wars they've had with Gaza. They have dropped leaflets saying, stay away from this neighborhood, stay away from this place, because they don't want to kill civilians. They want people in harm's way. And yet Hamas does this so they can get this propaganda and demonizing value for the international community and the media.
I mean, do you think that the media in some ways is facilitating this by suggesting, I think outright saying, that this, what's happening on the Gaza border, this violence is the result of moving the embassy? I mean, if it weren't the embassy, it would be something else. I mean, I was there in 2014. In fact, the screensaver on my smartphone, which I've shown you, is the Iron Dome in action when a rocket was shot over the kibbutz that we were in. And so, I mean, it's always something. I don't think that it's the while they may be using the move of the embassy as the pretext of this, it is just a fact that they are going to advocate for, agitate with violence no matter what happens.
Well, in their very charter, Tony, Hamas says that they want to destroy the state of Israel. So whether it's the move of the embassy, whether it's the fact that they want to return to 1948, they will find a reason to be able to try to format their own people, try to get the international media stirred up that this is why they're doing it. But you're right, they don't need a reason. They can use this as a pretext. But their really reason, their raison d'etre for Hamas is a terror group that wants to destroy the Jewish state. And they say that very clearly in their charter. That's why they spend millions of dollars in terror tunnels instead of building schools and hospitals, and that's the reason for what you see on the screens today. People need to understand the backstory, the context to this, and why Hamas is doing this.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, joining us from Israel, Chris Mitchell, CBN News, the bureau chief there in the Middle East. Chris, when you you look at what's happening there with Hamas in Gaza, and again, I think the media is kind of facilitating that. But when you look around beyond just Gaza Strip and you see how the other surrounding nations are responding, I think, and I'm not the only one that has said this, but I actually think that the bold move by the president in saying no, we're gonna do what's best for America and our ally, and we're gonna uphold what the law has been on the books for over 20 years. This is a show of strength, and you've been in the Middle East for over almost 20 years yourself. That's something that has currency in the Middle East when you show strength, and this could bring about a more managed peace in that region of the world.
I think so, exactly. You're right. Currency is the right word to use because there are a couple of things that really matter in the Middle East. The first thing is strength. If you keep up to your word, if you say something and actually do it, we saw that in a negative way when President Obama said he had a red line in Syria and that he would respond if President Bashar Assad uses chemical weapons. He used the chemical weapons and Obama didn't do anything. And that made a great deal here in the Middle East because they knew that Obama wasn't standing up to what he had said. On the other hand, President Trump said he would move the embassy. He did so. It matters here. The other thing that matters is strength. And if you're strong here in the Middle East, you really do gain respect of your neighbors. We see the other thing that many of the Sunni nations, they may protest mildly, but Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, Egypt and Jordan really are developing a closer relationship with Israel because they see the common enemy of Iran.
It's a utilitarian alliance, but it's an alliance nonetheless. And I think it brings about we have the opportunity to bring about a more managed peace. Chris, before I let you go, I think people need to also realize what Israel is doing for the folks in Gaza Strip. Some of the basic utilities and stuff that they provide, and even the health care. They're actually treating some of the folks in Gaza. And so Israel, I think, is bending over backwards to be good neighbors, but that story is not being told in the media.
You know, it's seldom reported and underreported that Israel sends in literally hundreds of trucks, over 100 trucks a day of materials that go into Gaza to provide food and fuel and materials for the Gazan people. And many times, believe it or not, it has happened in the past, Hamas is actually shelling those crossings where Israel is passing in those materials. The Egyptian border with Egypt many times is closed. People don't know that as well. But Israel is doing what it can to help the people in Gaza. And yet they're really held by an iron grip of a dictatorship of this group in Hamas that is holding their people captive. And yet Israel is doing what it can. And many times those materials are used to actually come against Israel. And yet Israel does what it can to help them people, help any humanitarian crisis going on in there. And so that's the story that people don't necessarily hear, but what Israel is doing. And not only in the Gaza border, believe it or not, up in the Syrian border, they're sending in materials for the Syrian people caught in the crossfire of the Syrian civil war.
Chris Mitchell, as always, great to have you on the program. Good to talk with you, my friend.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right. We'll see you soon, maybe in Israel. Chris Mitchell with CBN News. He is the Middle East Bureau Chief. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Let me transition here. In March of this year, the Supreme Court heard a case challenging a California law that requires pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry. Yeah, that's right. Forcing privately funded crisis pregnancy centers to advertise for abortion. Now, remember, most of these are religious entities. Joining us now to talk about this is Congressman Andy Harris. Andy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
And I appreciate you coming to FRC earlier today for a lecture. How significant of a court case is this?
You can't underestimate the significance of this court case. This is free speech, religious freedom, all wrapped up in one. The pro-choice movement. I mean, this is all the chips are down on this. If California can be allowed to compel speech, then there's no stopping, what government will do and liberal governments will do to pro-life individuals.
I mean, this is just mind-boggling of how the left wants to mandate everything that is speech. They want to restrict speech. They want to restrict association. I mean, this has far-reaching implications for not just crisis pregnancy centers, these centers that provide health care to women in unplanned pregnancies. This could spill over into other areas as well.
Oh, absolutely. The Supreme Court rules what I would view incorrectly in this case, there's nothing they can't tell a minister. There's nothing, they could compel ministers to preach from the pulpit things that are state required speech or state mandated speech that would go completely against, their religious beliefs. If we can't find that this compulsion that's incorporated into the Reproductive Fact Act in California that compels these nonprofit, privately funded centers that don't want to say what the government wants them to say, to say, it's free or low-cost abortion available, or even just to disclaim, when you're never making a claim that you're a medical center, to state that, we don't provide medical services. Well, you never said you provided medical services. I mean, why don't they go to the boys club in the afternoon,
right,
the boys and girls clubs in the afternoon, and compel them to also say, well, we don't provide medical services either.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know this is very personal to you as well, because as a medical doctor, what really brought you into the political realm was the issue of life. And these privately funded entities that are helping women, over 4,000 of these dot the landscape of America, they're making a difference. And I think that is what is motivating the left to attack them.
Absolutely. The left is scared of these because these are incredibly good ambassadors of the pro-life movement. The people who say, the pro-lifers, we should care about everyone. We care about everyone before and after birth. These pregnancy centers help people through their pregnancies and they help them afterwards. My late wife, God rest her soul, was the director of one. I'm a strong supporter of them in the pro-life movement. This should worry the pro-abortion movement. The fact that there are now three pro-life pregnancy centers for every pro-abortion abortion clinic, that's a worrisome statistic to those who.
And so they have to turn to government to try to shut them down. Andy, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us, and again, thanks for coming by and lecturing at FRC today.
Absolutely, thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, if you missed that lecture, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. All right, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, remember the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul: when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.